Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Auto workers back on the job. Culinary workers tell casinos don't gamble with workers' lives. The latest on voting by mail. And today on the show, how one city, Cleveland, Ohio, will weather the pandemic storm and are food shortages on the horizon. Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, May 18th edition of America's Workforce, recorded right here in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers across America. Our shows are all archived on awfradio.com, so if you miss a show, it's posted there. And this is the best part. You can listen to any show we do, wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, just some examples. We're noticing a lot more people are downloading the shows here in recent weeks. And if you get hooked on the show, please, please subscribe to our podcast and give us a rating. We appreciate a 5-star rating. All right, we have two guests on the show today. Council's Mike Polensic, who's been on the council since the late 70s, 40-plus years serving Cleveland. Boy, he's seen a lot of changes, and those changes are still happening. COVID-19, what's going to happen to the city budget? I mean, budgets all around the country are being dramatically affected. Just saw a story today about the county. Armin Buda saying that property tax revenues are going to drop about 10%, and that's not happened before. So this is going to have a long-lasting effect. And Mike is going to talk about how the city is projected to fare. This is just a guess right now on how we're going to survive all of this. Later in the show, we're going to be checking in with an individual by the name of Steve Groff. Steve Groff, that's GROFF.com. Steve is the founder of Cover Crop Coaching, which educates farmers and farm advisors about effective crop use, cover crop use, as he calls it. He is the author of an upcoming book, The Future Proof Farm, and he is going to discuss how COVID-19 could cause some countries, even the United States, to experience some food shortages. Now, as you know, our president, worried about the possibility of a meat shortage, recently ordered beef, pork, and poultry processing plants to stay open. Some is closed because of health concerns about employees, and you know, one plant had like 900 workers that got sick. Meanwhile, the head of the UN Food Program, World Food Program, has warned that COVID-19 will worsen existing hunger crises around the world, resulting in food shortages as well as famine. So, what are the farmers saying about this? And that's what we're going to talk about with Steve Groff as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, we're finally getting back to work. Ford workers, let's start there, are back on the job today after being out of the plant, and we're talking Avon Lake plant, for nearly 2 months due to the virus. Workers will have to follow new extensive safety protocols. The new protocol at Ford includes no-touch temperature scans when employees arrive at work, face masks for everyone in the building, 6 feet of spacing, and for those that can't be required to wear face shields. Ford is also working on giving every worker a watch from Samsung that buzzes if workers get too close to one another. How about that? Ford CEO Jim Hackett commented on how the company will be enforcing social distancing guidelines. And this is a quote. They have lots of consideration for social distancing. One example is we use to have two people inside a vehicle as it's going down an assembly line. Well, we stop that. In addition to masks and screening and new kinds of testing. Now, that change just isn't happening at Ford. GM and Fiat Chrysler will also be following strict safety guidelines as well. Soon, the Avon Lake plant will even provide tests to workers with results available within 24 hours. Interesting. Boy, a watch that buzzes when you get too close. More than 10,000 members of Unite Here's Culinary Workers Union held a car caravan rally on the Las Vegas Strip last week, demanding that casinos act with full transparency and put in place strong safety protections for workers and visitors as Nevada's casinos prepare to reopen. Nevada has a chance to be a leader in the hospitality industry, said Gianconda Klein of Unite Here, Secretary Treasurer for the Culinary Union. If casino companies will not release their plans and be transparent before reopening, how can customers and workers know they'll be safe, she asks. The union and the Bartenders Union of Unite Here published their own checklist of public health guidelines for gaming facilities looking to reopen during the pandemic. The HEROES Act, you might have heard about that, is the right prescription for America. That, according to Lee Saunders. Lee is the head of AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. That bill includes $875 billion in state and local aid, $90 billion in education assistance, and an increase in the federal Medicaid matching formula to ensure strong public services are maintained. He said the only way to beat COVID-19 and reopen the country is to save vital public services and the public service workers who provide them. And this bill from the House does exactly that. The legislation, instead of bailing out wealthy corporations, invests in the services and the people who make our community strong, people who provide clean water, safe roads, strong schools, fully staffed hospitals, and much more. By the way, an overwhelming majority of Americans support increasing funding for public services. That, according to a new poll commissioned by AFSCME, as well as the American Federation of Teachers. Many of them, as you know, are on the front lines of fighting this pandemic. And they've been leading a national campaign to urge Congress to help state and local governments recover from the economic devastation caused by COVID-19, which is forcing all kind of cuts to public services, as I indicated. By the way, that HEROES Act, it did pass in the House on Friday. A lot of the conservatives are saying, along with President Trump, that it's got no chance. It's got no chance. The Northern Plains United Labor Council, which is located in Fargo, North Dakota, has been supporting restaurant workers at Vinyl Taco, which is a regional restaurant chain, as they held a walkout last Saturday to demand the safer work environment that owners had promised. Workers' demands have been simple and reasonable. They want temperature testing at the beginning of shifts, personal protective equipment for kitchen staff, social distancing guidelines for guests, a $15 minimum wage for employees who do not receive tips, guidelines on sanitation procedures, and a plan in case a restaurant staff person tests positive. Michael Strike, an employee at the restaurant who helped organize the walkout, interesting name there, Michael Strike, spoke to a local radio station there, KFGO, to explain why he and his co-workers took collective action. He said there was a 9 a.m. meeting where almost all of our concerns were brushed aside. They reopened and operations didn't go forward as promised, so we were feeling pretty unsafe. That's why we had to take action. Can you blame them? Meanwhile, top union leaders marshaled by AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka are backing the $3.6 billion in the House stimulus bill to pay states to establish vote-by-mail systems. Whether the unionist statements plus wide public support for the idea will be enough to sway the president or the overwhelming majority of the Senate's ruling Republicans, that's still up in the air. Both Trump and his supporters fear that the more people vote, the more the Republicans will lose at the polls. Vote-by-mail money is in the $3 trillion House Democratic Economic Stimulus Bill, which, like I said, passed in the House on Friday. Senate sponsor Amy Klobuchar joined Trumka and union presidents over the weekend in a telephone press conference to push it. Now, Klobuchar said Congress needs to pass it now so states have enough time to set up and test run their vote-by-mail registrations, procedures, and systems. She said vote-by-mail will help the frontline workers, the nurses, those who are driving trucks and in grocery stores, and others who are working from home and have kids due to shelter-in-place policies the pandemic mandated. Voters also don't want to risk health or lives to the virus's community spread by waiting in long lines. This is all common sense, right? And that's pretty much what happened in the Wisconsin Democratic primary about a month ago. Lawmakers there forced voters to stand, and 72 voters and one election judge got sick. So we'll see what happens here. A lot of people are fighting this. And I saw over the weekend a couple Facebook posts about the military. If you're stationed overseas, how are you going to go to the polls? They've been doing it for years. What's the problem? All right, we have to take a break. You are listening to America's Workforce, our segment with Council's Mike Polensic coming up next. Don't go away.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
This special message goes out to all veterans and dependents of veterans who are living in Cuyahoga County. The Cuyahoga County Veterans Service Commission proudly provides a wide variety of services and assistance, including the following: filing VA claims, helping obtain disability or widow pensions, assistance obtaining military records, memorial affairs, social work, rent or mortgage assistance, utility bills, food, clothing and hygiene, and VA medical transportation. For more information about these services or your eligibility, call 1-844-405-VETS. That's 1-844-405-8387. Or go online to CuyahogaVets.org. The Cuyahoga County Veterans Service Commission, veterans helping veterans since 1886.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded here in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers across America. Once again, you can listen to this show or any show that we do wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, just some examples. By the way, this next segment brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find them online at oft-aft.org. Melissa Cropper will be joining us for her segment. She's president of the OFT. That's tomorrow. Right now, let's go to line number one, and welcome back to the show. Every other month, we check in with Council's Mike Polensic, who was elected. I was just thinking about his term in office here. So, Mike, 1978, you were elected to council, right?
Yes.
Okay. So we were just getting, we had the crazy winter here, 77, 78, the blizzard. I'm sure you were probably stuck on the streets of Cleveland.
Cannot forget.
And then, okay, and then the default came in 79.
Yes.
He had all the fighting with council. Dennis Kucinich was mayor. Then we had the plane on 9/11, the plane flying over Cleveland. And yeah. I remember the air traffic controllers. And you were the council president back then. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Then in 07, 08, 09, we had the financial fallout with the Great Recession. And now we have COVID-19. All right. Can anything else happen under your term in office here, Mike?
Well, I've seen it. I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let me put it to you that way. And, you know, as we're talking about this, I'm thinking, what have we been watching for the last month now? All the old reruns, athletic events, fights. I was watching I'm watching all these old fights on TV. I'm watching old football games. I'm watching this. I'm thinking myself, it's like a flashback. So it's funny you mention all those things today, because we've been living a flashback for at least a month here. So it's been a real experience, to say the least. And all of them that you've laid out, plus many more, I was there to see it firsthand and experience it firsthand. But nothing, I can tell you, nothing is like this. I mean, 9/11, I'll never forget that, can't forget it, how it brought the country to a stop. But that was for a short period of time. That was for maybe a week, 2 weeks at the most. And we were like just somewhat shifted into neutral. And then again, we had national financial issues. But the fact of the matter is, to see what we've been experiencing now for over 2.5 months, who could have ever envisioned? But now you realize that you're as we're taking the opportunity to read, and people are doing more research, where you have some experts, especially in the healthcare medical industry, who predicted this in 2006, 2007, that there would be a worldwide pandemic, and yet the powers that be weren't listening. And here we find ourselves today in this situation.
Talk to me about your ward, because I've been watching the zip codes in the health departments, but we've been kind of showing where the concentration of the virus is. And it seems in the closer knit communities, which you represent, is higher, which is to be expected, I guess.
Well, we're still fortunate. Zip code 19, which I live in, and portions of 10, we're still among the lowest, thank goodness. So you really, it's really ironic when you look at the county levels of the virus. Some of the highest income levels, highest zip code levels, have the greatest number of cases. And what we've been told and what we've been briefed on is that those are the folks that were going to spring break. Those were the folks that were going on trips, taking airline flights, that were on, vacations, spring break. So we've heard it all. Now, is it 90% or 100% accurate? We don't know. I don't think anyone knows at this point. Who got this? You hear people who never came into contact with any, never went on any trips, came down with it. So hopefully at some point after this dust settles here, if the dust does settle, that we can really understand, have a great, better understanding of what happened here, how this originated. I think there's a great deal of suspicion about what happened in China. I've been reading as much as I can, and we've had, obviously, we've been getting updates and briefings, but to say that this came out of a market, this worldwide pandemic, I have a real problem with that. I question that, and I think most people do. I personally believe it came out of a lab. Somebody was infected in a lab, and that person spread it, and it spread from China throughout the world due to people getting on a plane and worldwide travel. But it also should tell us that the people at the top in this country, for some reason, and none of us can understand it, when we were all watching people in spacesuits wearing respirators in China, and they were shutting down cities with tens of millions of people in them, why that didn't register here in this country with our leadership is beyond me. I can't even comprehend how they could not imagine or could not even conjure up or think that somehow it wasn't going to spread.
Yeah.
And it spread worldwide. And when you look at the numbers, we're approaching 90,000 Americans who have lost their lives. And predictions that by August, there'll be well over 100,000. Scary, extremely scary of what's transpired here. And you and I, and all of us who've been involved in the labor movement and in working in what I want to call the working community, we've talked about jobs that have left our country, that have fled offshore. This whole COVID-19 disaster that we've been confronted with now has exposed all the weaknesses in our medical system and our delivery systems. And what has been the greatest focus on is the fact that critical supply chains have moved offshore because of greedy, and let's be very blunt about this, greedy corporate executives who do not want to pay a living wage, who don't want to pay health care, who don't want to provide a pension program for their employees, have taken our jobs offshore. And now when I'm watching a national executive on TV say, well, we don't have enough nose swabs, and we all know you don't have enough masks and what they call PPE, personal protection equipment, respirators, ventilators. I mean, come on. This is America. 2020. I can't even believe what I'm watching, what we are experiencing, the fact that such critical items have been allowed to move offshore, and because, again, of nothing more than pure greed, and we've got to get those supply chains back in this country. We've got to put Americans to work. We got to build American, and it's outrageous. I hope it's a wake-up call. They say, and we've all heard it, that Americans have a very short memory. Well, in this case, Americans better not have a short memory, and anyone running for national office, anyone, Democrat, Republican, because let's be very blunt, Democrats and Republicans at the top both waved goodbye to our jobs as they fled offshore. We saw We saw no action to keep jobs here, except for a great group of individuals like Sherrod Brown and others who fought for years to identify the fact that we're losing critical jobs, only to have national leaders not pay attention. But here we are again today. We find ourselves in this situation. So the message should be going forward, as I've been saying in my own community, who's ever running for public office on a national level or state level, what are you going to do? What are you doing to put an emphasis on Buy American? I don't care if it's on construction projects. I don't care what it is. That's going to be our calling. And if we don't do it, when we're faced with the next pandemic or worldwide disease, or whatever it may be, we can only say, look in a mirror and ask ourselves, who should we blame? We should blame ourselves at that point, as we should be blaming ourselves right now.
Yep. You know, it's funny you're bringing this up now, because I saw a story over the weekend, and they were targeting smartphones. I mean, just half the world's smartphones are assembled in China. 90% of the laptop computers and all the key components are made in China. And then you can get into the pharmaceuticals. I think about 90% of the pharmaceutical industry move their productions over there. But, you know, to your point that we allowed this to happen, it happened 2 decades ago when the United States government allowed China into the World Trade Organization. And there's some numbers on this. Yeah, there's some numbers on this. At that time, we're talking, I think, 2001. China had 6% share of global manufacturing. You know what it is now? It's 28%.
Yeah.
And that 28% is 10 points ahead of the United States.
Exactly. And not only that, but we haven't even talked about the Chinese government stealing our most important technology. We see where they pay professionals and pay physicians and other people to provide their government with vital information. These are folks in America. These are key individuals working, whether it be in the medical profession, the manufacturing community, technology companies. They pay people to actually provide them with documentation and information. And we let that happen. That is going on right now as you and I are speaking. The whole fact that they are trying to control precious metals and strategic metals throughout the world. We see what's happened in just the last some weeks where they have threatened us, just as you mentioned about pharmaceuticals. They have threatened this country about withholding pharmaceuticals. We know right now they are trying to steal research on COVID-19 electronically. I mean, it's what I don't get it for the life of me. From the standpoint of the President of the United States, his inner circle, the United States Senate, the United States Congress, why isn't there a massive outrage coming out of them as it pertains to what is taking place? But as a prominent person told me, you have to understand, China spends millions and millions of dollars on hiring lobbyists, consultants. Those consultants and those lobbyists in America write campaign checks, and that it is extremely. You know, I'm a politician. I've been in political office longer than anyone in the history of the city of Cleveland. But when I think that there are people on the federal level in this country that hold public office that are in essence selling us out, selling our country out, selling working people, working men and women, who has suffered the greatest during this pandemic? People who make under $40,000 a year. That's who
right.
has suffered. Who lost their jobs? What's the greatest death toll? Working men and women. And again, if we as a country are not outraged at this point, I don't know what else I can say. I mean, think about this. We boast that we have the best military equipment. We have the best ships. We have the best tanks. We have the best fighter jets. We have the greatest atomic weapon stockpile in the world. Yet, one bug, one, you know, person or group of people who came to this country brought this country to its economic knees in 2 months. So what does it say to other countries and terrorist organizations? You don't need bombs. You don't need bullets. You infect America. You bring it to its knees. And when you think that an entire aircraft carrier can be brought down by one infected person who came on board, one sailor or a group of sailors who came back on board that ship, a nuclear aircraft carrier should send shockwaves through all of us. We have got to wise up as Americans. We've got to become more nationalistic than ever before. That's not to say we should oppose trade. I'm a fair trader like most working people. You know, I have no problem with fair trade, but there's no fair trade coming out of China. There's no
nope.
fair trade coming out of other countries who take advantage of us, and our leaders let it happen. So going into this presidential election, to both of the candidates running and to all candidates running for the House and the Senate, what's your position on Buy American? What's your position on Build in America? What's your position on taking away the tax breaks that have been given to American companies to move jobs offshore and to do everything they can to break unions? I mean, this is outrageous. I've become myself during this 2 months, and I'm not the only one, I can tell you. I've become an angry American. I become angry about what I'm seeing, the toll that it's taking on our country, the toll it's taken on some of our families. I've got a son that's out of work, who's been laid off. I mean, I see what he went through and still goes through trying to get unemployment. I'm seeing what other families. I'm getting those phone calls. I'm seeing the devastation on small businesses, the businesses that are starting to fold. They're predicting that anywhere between 25% to 40% of restaurants could fail in this country. Think about that. The number of people who are employed in the food service industry, restaurants, and all the vendors and suppliers. We haven't seen the beginning of the dominoes on jobs, on unemployment, and it's a frightening fact, but you know what? It's reality, and you can either deal with it and deal with it effectively, or you can, you know, you can wring your hands and moan and groan, but we better do something about it. We better hold people accountable. And if we don't, then we're going to all pay a severe price as what we've been paying for the last 2 months.
All right, Mike, hold that thought. I have to take a quick break. I want to talk about the impact of COVID-19 on the city budget. We'll get into that.
Good.
Later in the broadcast, Stephen Groff will be joining us talking about food shortages. Could we see a food shortage in America? It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. Part union newsletter, part industry trade magazine. The Labor Citizen provides the most comprehensive coverage of the issues that matter to the hard-working members of Ohio's labor trades. Building trades unions that subscribe to the Labor Citizen guarantee their members receive a monthly report crafted by their own union leaders, along with interesting feature stories and news relevant to Ohio's union construction industry. The full-color tabloid is already being delivered to active and retired members from nearly 50 different building trade unions. You won't find more comprehensive coverage of the news and issues important to Ohio's labor trades anywhere. And the only way you can have this valuable monthly publication delivered to your mailbox is if your local union decides to join. If your building trades union is not receiving the Labor Citizen, ask why at your next regular meeting. Or send an email to info@laborcitizen.com for more information. That email address again is info@laborcitizen.com.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
For over 20 years, organized labor has turned to the BMA Media Group for its communications and events needs, because the BMA Media Group knows how to positively impact labor's issues and spread the union message. The BMA Media Group is a union marketing, public relations, production, and events firm. So BMA Media knows what it takes to market union value for you. To learn how the BMA Media Group can assist your labor organization, just visit www.bmamedia.com.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
Good afternoon and welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded in Cleveland, Ohio. For workers across America, you can find us online at awfradio.com. And once again, you can listen to the show wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, just some examples there. We're speaking with Council's Mike Polensic, longest-serving member of council, 40-plus years. And I have to ask you, Mike, what's the impact of this virus going to be on the city budget? Right now, it seems like Mayor Jackson is trying to hold his own on all this. I know they got money in the rainy day fund, but what are you hearing so far from City Hall?
Well, we're going to know, Flash, within the next 2 days what the projections are. We know the first quarter of the year weren't bad at all because the virus did not reflect on that. So now we're in the second quarter where the greatest number of job loss has taken place. We expect more job loss. Obviously, admissions tax is totally gone. Parking tax is gone. And so you start to see that domino in other areas. So we really have not seen the full impact yet. That's why I said before that we haven't seen the real avalanche yet come down the pike of the revenue coming to the city of Cleveland. But it's affected waste collection. It's affected interaction with police officers because you've had a break up police officers. You assign one officer to a car now. That's what the command staff did. So you're seeing this entire impact on the delivery of day-in and day-out city services, not to speak of the fact that our revenue is going to be hammered. You're going to see some states who possibly could could go into default. By law, Ohio has to have a balanced budget, and by law, the city of Cleveland has to have a balanced budget. So we're going to see, again, a domino effect on statewide programs, which are going to affect cities' revenue, because we think the funds that we receive from the state now are going to be severely restricted and cut back more than they have in the past. So we haven't seen it yet. We're going to know the next 2 days. We're going to get a better indication as we move forward here. But it does not look good. And Cleveland might be in much better shape than other major cities. I don't have to tell you what New York, Chicago, L.A., and other cities are being confronted with. Unless there's additional federal stimulus money coming into the states, not only to help states, but to help counties and cities, you're going to see, again, a domino of cities, municipalities filing bankruptcy. That's a given. There's no way around it. And the folks in Washington can talk about all they want about, you know, that they can't, they're not going to bail out, or they don't want to bail out states or cities. We're Americans, last time I looked. You know, we're Americans, and when you have people in Washington saying, well, if this state files bankruptcy or these cities file bankruptcy, that's just the way it is. Wrong,
yeah.
Because then there's going to be a trickle-down effect. You're going to see massive layoffs across this country of critical workers who are providing everyday services. None of us want to see that happen. So people in Washington better wake up to reality. You know, the city of Cleveland, the state of Ohio, we didn't cause this problem. This problem came offshore, and our federal government did not protect us. And now it's up to them to provide a financial resource to keep us solvent. That's all I can say. I mean, there's no way to even beat around that bush. We didn't cause the problem. This was not caused by the people in this country. And for some reason, now we're seeing people dig in their heels and say, well, we can't help the states anymore. We can't help these cities. I mean, give me a break. Give me a break here. We need help, and if you don't help us, you want to talk about carnage or a domino falling. You haven't seen nothing yet.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Mike, let's take a look back at the Great Recession, which was, 12 years ago. And I know the city had to lay off some people. There were some furloughs involved, cuts in pay and all that kind of stuff. Comparatively speaking to something like that, it seems to me worse. I'd like to get your opinion, and also probably longer lasting. Your thoughts on that?
Well, we think it's going to be worse, but we won't know until we get the second quarter. Obviously, the second quarter numbers come in. You can also tell by the number of people who are filing for unemployment. That should tell you right there. It tells us all something. Those numbers continue to rise. So could it be right now there are national people predicting that this will be as bad, if not worse, than the Great Depression with regard to people unemployed? So I think, again, none of us here today in public office today have ever experienced this. We're going to have to do whatever we can, to tighten our belts. I don't know what that actually means from the standpoint of, will there be layoffs in the city of Cleveland? I hope not. Will there be pay freezes? Possibly. We don't know at this point. That's in the city of Cleveland. Nationally, some cities are going to be devastated. I think, you know, Mauro Cuomo, you know, governor of New York, has done a magnificent job, as we've seen. Governor DeWine, in my opinion, has done an excellent job in Ohio of trying to do his best to keep things together. These governors and these mayors across this country have never been put in this situation before. I've been totally impressed by what I've seen, what I want to call out of the local levels, out of the states, out of the cities, what they've attempted to do, with not a whole lot of help coming out of the federal government until they were forced to. That's the tragic thing about this whole discussion. I mean, they were in denial. From the president on down, there were people in Washington in denial as to what was taking place here. Now, again, when you look at the almost 1.5 million cases in the country, almost 90,000 people dead, that number growing daily. How many people are walking around with this? They don't even know it and passing it on to other individuals. So until we do massive testing, isolation, and providing medical attention to those who do have it, and contact tracing so we know for sure who those people came into contact with. Until those three things are put into high gear, we're going to continue to fight this battle. And then again, we have no idea what's going to happen come fall, if it's going to come back, if there's a new wave that's going to come back. But it all comes back. You got to be able to test people because we don't know when a vaccine or some treatment's going to come down the pike. None of us have any indication. I've been getting, you know, our daily briefings. No one can tell us that. And when you have wonderful organizations like Cleveland Clinic and University Hospital and Metro Hospitals in the city of Cleveland working diligently, when institutions, world-renowned institutions such as them, cannot tell you when the possibility of a vaccine or treatment is coming down the pike, then it should tell all of us that this is something we're going to be confronted with for some time. And if we all, if we don't pay attention, if we don't keep social distancing, if we don't keep enforcing the personal hygiene and everything else that we need to do, because I think we're all seeing over the weekend when some states started reopening, you saw people packed in bars and restaurants without wearing, you know, masks, without social distancing. And now we see in one day the number of cases in Texas that jumped significantly as a result of their reopening is sending shockwaves across the country. So I can understand why other governors, other mayors are being very cautious as we go forward, because there's two states that have not opened up at all. And so they're watching it real closely. I think Governor Wine has been very, very proactive in what he's been attempting to do. But we are faced with something, Flash, that no one has ever seen before. No one has ever experienced before. Let's listen to the healthcare professionals. Let's listen to the experts. And let's not make decisions based on an upcoming election. That is going to do us all a great disservice and kill more Americans. I don't know what else I can say.
All right, we'll leave it on that note, Mike. Thank you for being so candid on this, and you make a whole lot of sense. There's no question.
Thank you, brother.
No question. All right, hang in there. We'll talk to you in 2 months, and we'll get a better view of okay. how the city's going to fare through this, okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
Take care and be safe. Mike Polensic on our live line. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Stephen Groff will be joining us. Will there be a food shortage because of the coronavirus pandemic? We'll find out next on America's Workforce. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
Welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded here in Cleveland, Ohio. For workers across America, you can listen to the show, any show we do, wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, just some examples. And once you get hooked on the show, please subscribe to our podcast, give us a rating, and we would appreciate a five-star rating. By the way, this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go to line number two. Welcome Steve Groff to the show, and Steve is the founder of Cover Crop Coaching, which educates farmers and farm advisors about effective cover crop use, and he's here to talk about the possibility we've been hearing because of the COVID-19 situation at meat processing plants that there's going to be a food shortage, so we figured why not bring an expert to the table. Steve, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, it's great to be with you today.
All right. He's also author of the book, Future Proof Farm, The Future Proof Farm. Cover Crop Coaching. Explain that part before we move on here. I'm kind of curious as what that all is all about.
Yeah, sure. For those who are not so familiar with agriculture, cover crops is the term we use for plants or crops, you could say, that we plant between the cash crop cycle. So typically that's over winter. You know, you harvest the corn or the soybeans, and then we'll plant something like cereal rye or radishes or legumes like hairy vetch to protect the soil on hilly terrain or on flatter terrain to keep the nitrogen or the nitrate nitrogen from leaching into the groundwater or running off into Lake Erie and places like that. So it's basically to cover the soil. Cover crop is kind of where that name comes from, but it all has to do with keeping the biology alive in the soil as well between the cash crops. And that results in actually a better food. It helps to protect the environment. A lot of good things about this. It's a simple concept that is slowly gaining more and more acres across the country.
All right. How are the farmers doing with this pandemic situation going on right now? What are you hearing?
Well, like in any other sectors of the industry, there's winners and losers. The winners are more the locally grown or the local farmers that are selling direct to the public. There's not much of a middle supply chain, and so it's pretty straightforward. Those who are part of the supply chain or the just-in-time supply chain that we've enjoyed for, you know, reasonably priced food and so forth over the years, kind of found a weak point in that now, because anything that needs to be processed, like meat, for example, requires human labor. And you have someone who is sick or someone who is just not comfortable with going to work with those who may be sick, they don't show up. So when you have missing components in an assembly line, so to speak, there's only so many that are missing, and you have to completely shut down. That's what really happened in the meat industry, and I believe it'll happen a little bit in vegetables. You can basically tie it into any vegetable that requires more human component to it with packaging and processing, that we may see some sporadic shortages.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean we won't find it? Prices going up? What's the answer to that?
It's going to be up and down. There's going to be some shortages. For instance, right now in the middle part of the country, asparagus and strawberries are coming in locally, and people want the local food, and the prices are on the higher side. And yes, there is some scarcity, but then you have other foods that, you know, may not affect hardly at all. So I think people need to be prepared that if they indeed want something specific, they may have to search for it a little bit more, or may have to pay a little bit more for it, depending on what that product is. There's going to be enough food. We're not going to have an overall food shortage. It's just you may not get the products that you want. I think that's what we're seeing right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, over the years, we've seen this growth in urban farming. A lot of people say, you know, the farm to table, and a lot of backyards expanding, saying, you know what, I'm going to prepare for this. And plus, we're in the season right now. You see that happening right now in America?
Definitely there is an increased interest in it to be able to kind of back up our food supply. That's never going to be the main component. of growing food. I like it as a farmer because I think it helps people understand some of the challenges that we go through in growing food, because you don't just plant a tomato in a pot and put it on your patio and get these beautiful, round, red, juicy, delicious tomatoes like you may be buying in the store. Oh, that can happen, and some people have what we call a green thumb, and it's almost therapy to grow something. And I think there's something to that, actually. But as far as that providing a mainstream part of our food production, I don't see that happening, but I totally support it where it can be. Even rooftop gardens, there's been some of that in some of the downtown areas where there's simply no space but except the roof. Mm-hmm. All these things are good. Number one, it does help a little bit for the overall food supply, but I think it's just also there's a kind of an emotional attachment of learning and understanding how food grows. I think that's important, and understanding where our food supply is coming from.
Okay, talk to me about future-proof farming. You got my curiosity up on that one. What's that all about?
Well, there's a couple different meanings that I chose in that title. Obviously, so farmers can stay in business, and that's kind of fundamental. And the other thing is where the direction of food is going. And I wrote this book before, of course, I knew anything about the coronavirus, but there is, I think this has raised a little bit of an awareness that we need to be healthy. We need to have a healthy immune system, and that is related to the kinds of food we eat. So the Future Proof Farm describes how I have been growing more nutritious foods. In other words, a tomato or a butternut squash are two of the crops that I grow. There's more nutrition in there, more vitamins and more minerals. And it has to do, as we started when we opened up here, about using cover crops, not tilling the soil, keeping the biology alive in the soil. We've been, as farmers, have been somewhat guilty of almost intravenously feeding our soil with all kinds of amendments. And, I'm not saying that fertilizers are all bad. I'm not saying that all pesticides are bad, but they've been way overused. And so if we pull back on that, on those inputs, not only does that save farmers some money, but it also, as you learn into this complex system that is really simply mimicking nature, diversity, trying to grow more crop rotations in our cropping system and using cover crops, having something living in the soil at all times, all these things then add up to a more robust farm for the farmer, and also a better food product. So it's a win-win. And you can put another win in there for the environment, because we're keeping the pollution out of the lakes, Chesapeake Bay, where I'm from, Lake Erie, Mississippi water basin, and all that. So it's really a win for all, and that's what's behind the Future Proof Farm. It's where we're headed.
Yeah, yeah. Is organic farming part of that as well, Steve?
So I'm not an organic farmer, and people sometimes, question me on that. You could say that a lot of what I do would fall under organic principles. See, the organic paradigm is about how you grow a given food product. What I'm talking about is more about the end result, and how we get the good end result of nutritional density in our produce, in our vegetables, in anything that we grow that will even be consumed by animals and eventually consumed by humans. So from my standpoint, I've taken it a step further than organic. There's a lot of good organic farmers out there that truly do pay attention to having a good product, but there are some who just kind of go by the book, so to speak, and it's just about following the rules of the organic paradigm. And I'm going to say that we need to do better than that. It's more about the end result of getting a more nutritional, dense food that will actually, again, help boost our immune systems, keep us healthier, and all that is kind of where a lot of society wants to go now. And I get that. I understand it. So for me as a farmer, that's what I'm trying to do.
There you go. Yeah, you want the strongest immune system now than ever before. So that's certainly good advice there, Steve. All right, you find more at stevegroff.com. That's G-R-O-F-F, stevegroff.com, founder of Cover Crop Coaching. Steve, you take care. Be safe, all right?
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, our segment with the Ohio Federation of Teachers. And how about this story? Tax incentives that created zero jobs in Youngstown. We'll talk all about it tomorrow. Until then, all of you, be safe and have a wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.